Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. It is a Monday, Memorial Day. A lot of interesting stuff going on today. How are you doing today, Dan?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful. You said you had a couple of stories you want to break before we have Chuck Baldwin on. Go ahead and start on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we all, you know, reflect on Memorial Day today, you know, always keep in prayers the families that have endured hardships because of what has happened, because of war and protecting our freedom all the way back to the Revolutionary War. So today, you make sure you are reflecting on that and praying for those individuals. One story that I want to start off with, because I've been following this kind of closely over in Europe, over the weekend, since the end of last week, if you guys saw this, with the arrest of Tommy Robinson. Now, it's been in the media on and off in certain areas, but it just took a whole nother turn for the worst over the weekend. If you guys saw this, Tommy Robinson basically is a UK journalist who has been extensively speaking out against the threat of Islamic extremism for nearly a decade in the UK and Europe alike. He's also the founder of English Defense League, and he's really, really, really been waking a lot of people up through his journalism, through his reporting, through his live feeding, showing people what's going on in the UK. Well, over the weekend, you guys saw he was basically arrested for breaching the peace outside of a courthouse during an explosive gang trial. Now, he was not inside the courthouse. He was literally on the street, on the sidewalk, live reporting video feed about this gang trial of this multi-Muslim gang that basically gang raped this 14-year-old girl. Robinson showed the accused men entering the courtroom in live stream on the roadway, where he was reporting on it. After more than an hour of broadcasting, footage showed police officers approach him, arrest him for allegedly breaching the peace and incitement of court. They said supposedly he was under a suspended sentence for committing contempt of court, doing the exact same thing last year by basically live covering outside a court hearing that was going on another gang rape case. So basically what they've done now is, because of his breach of peace, supposedly being outside talking about what's going on, about real journalism, about these Muslim hordes that are coming into the UK, that's considered now a breach of peace in the UK. Within 6 hours of his arrest, Robinson was sentenced to 13 months in a federal penitentiary in the UK. 13 months, guys. And here's the creepy part about this. Over the weekend, Fox News actually reported on it that UK officials and UK media have all been placed on a gag order to completely keep the discussion of Tommy Robinson hidden from the public in the mainstream UK media. Robinson's lawyer warned that, considering the presence of many Muslim gang members in prison, a 13-month sentence was literally tantamount to a death sentence. Tommy's lawyer said he will likely die in jail, given his profile. The judge basically said he did not care. The head of the UKIP says the UK media gag order was beyond authoritarian. He said, "What kind of police state has the United Kingdom turned into?" He goes, "I'm trying to recall a legal case where someone was convicted of a crime and he cannot be reported on." A petition calling for his release has gathered more than 300,000 signatures already just over the weekend. So this guy basically is arrested for breach of peace. He sentenced to 13 months in prison within 6 hours, and the judge puts out a doggone gag order on the media so they cannot talk about his arrest. And you gotta remember, this whole situation all comes back to him simply exercising his right as a human being to speak freely, unmolested, about the truth that's going on in the UK. That is the crazy part about this, Dad, is that this all stems down to him simply wanting to give truth to the population of the United Kingdom.
Austin, they don't have our constitution. They've got a king, you know, a queen, and you know, and all this kind of stuff. They're a monarchy. You know, remember we've talked about this so many times. You know, the queen always likes to pretend like she doesn't have any authority in England. It's a complete and total lie. I remember a few years ago, Canada wasn't doing properly in their parliament, according to her. She went, the whole thing, basically fired them all and sent them home. I mean, This is all from the upper echelons. I mean, the one person that I am absolutely shocked hasn't been arrested yet in England is David Icke. David Icke just basically hammers the king, hammers the queen, whether it's the king right now, the Prince Charles in waiting or whatever, William or whatever. But, you know, they hammer the royal family, but they simply didn't want this because remember, the globalist plan is for this new world order and for the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews to bring in the Battle of Armageddon, to bring in the new World War III, and to bring in the end times, and to bring in the tribulation, in which the Christians believe they're going to get raptured out at the beginning of the tribulation, and all hell's going to break loose on earth, and basically we get to leave before anything bad happens to us, which isn't basically, it doesn't line up with any scripture from the beginning of time that we can find, but they just want to believe this because of the Zionist Scofield Bible, and we've talked about this so many times, and so but the King of England, the Queen of England, and now, you know, of course, I'm Prince, we talked about Prince William again, I'm going to not correct myself again, this monarchy, they don't give the peasants, you know, they don't give the peasants the rights to do with this guy. And once you get the anger of these basically these kleptocrat, aristocratic royals, the ability to put you away, they just throw you in jail. And now he's going to, like you said, it'll probably be a death sentence. And all he's trying to do is make, but see, the problem he's got, remember the mayor of London is a Muslim. The mayor of London is a Muslim. I mean, you know, the Queen may have been involved, but the mayor of London may have been involved. He may have already had the whole tracks greased, so as soon as he was arrested, that he'd be put in jail and taken off the street and the gag order would be signed. I mean, this is what happens when you bring a huge majority of foreigners into your country that don't reflect your same values. I mean, look at Ireland right now. Because the Catholic Church has lost so much of its ability to lead Ireland, they're so disgusted with the Catholic Church because of the priests raping these young boys and pedophilia. The Catholic Church no longer has much authority in Ireland at all or anywhere else in the world. Even the hardcore Catholics have had enough of it, especially with this new nutbag that they've got as Pope. And now they've actually passed the law now allowing, you know, the first trimester abortion for the first time, you know, in decades and decades and decades in Ireland. And the sad part about it is, the Catholic Church opposed it, but there's no longer any authority. So when you have all of this stuff going on, I mean, think about this for a second. Ireland basically is in a negative population growth. Got it. Okay, so it's the United States immigration. Got it. I mean, all of these things are happening all over the world in all of these major Western cultures. But now they're going to bring abortion back into Ireland and start doing abortion again, which they haven't done for many decades in Ireland, to continue to kill the indigenous population. Guys, this is all part of the Jason Scholars committee that they had. They had, you know, several things they had to do. Remember, build deep underground military bunkers, move parts of the population to other planets, basically blow a hole in the ozone to allow noxious gas to escape. He's also included doing an entire eugenics protocol. And the Jason Scholars worked with DARPA for decades, 50 years, you know, to basically bring about this eugenics protocol, which they're full-blown in. Underground bunkers, they're full-blown in. They decided if they blew a hole in the ionosphere, let the Earth vent its gases, we may lose all the oxygen. But that didn't stop them from releasing hydrogen bombs into the atmosphere. That's the idiot still did that. Thinking they may destroy the planet. I mean, you can't even make this stuff up. And so the problem we've got with all of these guys is they're being controlled through the Sabbatean Kabbalists, the Luciferians, the Frankists, through the Babylonian money magic. See, they look at money, and let me just kind of give you a little bit of esoteric session for a second. They look at money like it's an energy field, like it's energy. They see everything as an energy field. They don't see it as paper or as currency or as gold or silver. They see it as energy because they understand how everything works in an energy matrix, which is what the Earth is. And everything they do in their ritualistic magic ceremonies is to bring this energy flow through them. That's why it's called Babylonian money magic. This is what they do, and this is what the kind of the sickos they are. These guys control the planet. Directly or indirectly, they're always beneath the scenes. Henry Ford said, you dig deep enough under any rock, you're going to find some doggone, you know, international banker crawling around underneath it, basically who's orchestrated this whole thing. And this is exactly what's going on. It's happening all over the planet. We're going to talk some to Chuck Baldwin about that today. But I want to read another article to you. This is an interesting story, and I had to verify it because I was going to use it today on the show, and I thought, well, my gosh, I got to verify this one. The U.S. House strips Trump of war powers on Iran, and the story's been buried. You know, you can't make this stuff up. You know, Congress actually stepped up to the plate with a surprise unanimous vote attaching an amendment to the Defense Authorization Bill, stating that no law exists which gives the president power to launch a military strike against the Islamic Republic. Now, this is a unanimous passage of a bipartisan amendment and a strong and timely counter to the Trump administration withdrawal from the Iran deal and its increasingly hostile rhetoric, Congressman Keith Ellison said. The amendment sends a powerful message to the American people, members of Congress, who do not want war with Iran. Today, Congress acted to reclaim its authority over the use of military force. Now, I'm shocked by this, to be honest with you. In fact, I was so shocked by it, I didn't believe it. I had to vet this one. I vet almost everything. This one I really vet. I went to Keith Ellison, the guy who's being quoted in here. I went to his Facebook page because I wanted to find out what he really said about this. And sure enough, he really did say this. He actually wrote a whole article on her on his Facebook page about this. And now, of course, he's being called an anti-Semite, which I thought was pretty expected. And it says, and he said the House, this right on the front of his Facebook page for Representative Keith Ellison, says the House makes clear there is no authority of a military force against Iran. And he actually went and did the article on that. He's got some posted things on there as far as videos. And so, yeah, I'm impressed with Keith Ellison. I wish we had some more of those guys around the country. I'm only hoping when this reaches the Senate, they don't strip it back out of the bill, which they're probably going to do, especially if the warmonger out of Arizona is still alive, Austin. What do you think?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, this stuff is just absolutely getting crazier and crazier. And I saw this, too, and I thought this was a pretty interesting article as far as I looked it up, and it's definitely accurate now, as the House passed a $717 billion defense policy bill, which is known as the National Defense Authorization Act, in almost close to unanimous decision, as close as it gets, which is crazy to me. The National Defense Authorization Act of 2019 authorizes repair and replacements for military infrastructure, equipment, aircraft, submarines, and helicopters. The opponents of the bill are worried this pushes us even further and faster down the path to war. That might in part because the bill has provisions that authorizes the Secretary of Energy to modify or develop low-yield nuclear warheads for submarine-launched ballistic missiles. Democrats reportedly drafted amendments to limit funding for potential warheads, but they were fully defeated. The bill is not done. The Senate is working on its own defense authorization bill, and the two chambers will have to agree on the final version. Now, from what I'm seeing with this, this is not the actual budget for the budget bill already passed. The Pentagon funds already passed. This is further spending through the National Defense Authorization Act could give the military basically another $700 billion in funding, if I'm not mistaken, Dad, which because obviously we're seeing what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on nationwide and how they're sitting there still complaining that we don't have enough money to build missiles in the country, we don't have missiles money for this, we can't repair that, and we're going through literally trillions of dollars a year now in the military. It's pretty clear to me that this money is going somewhere, and it's not to the military individuals themselves, nor is it to the equipment they operate. It's going to some type of black op funding that's either on this earth or off this earth. I don't know, but something very strange is going on with the amount of money that we've begun to spend over the last couple years, and specifically this year alone, going into next year now.
It's almost mind-boggling, Austin. I mean, you know,
it is.
It's like they know that the United States is bankrupt, that we have no ability to ever pay it back. That, like we mentioned earlier with the Babylonian money magic, that these guys, these sorcerers that run the planet, are pretty much just doing whatever they want to do anyhow. Luciferians, whatever you want to call them. And so they're just kind of just going along with the flow now. Just print up as much currency as they want.
Yeah.
One more thing. WikiLeaks basically tweets, by the way, that QAnon, the thing that everybody's following, now stay with me on this one. I've been telling you this for months. This is WikiLeaks now saying this. It has tweeted that QAnon is a Pied Piper PSYOP operation. There you go. I've been telling you that for months. And it seems like this analysis, unfortunately, is increasingly appears to be correct. And this is another tweet by Susie Dawson. She says, I referred to QAnon today as a Pied Piper operation. What I meant by this is that the operation exists to round up people that are otherwise dangerous to the deep state because they are genuinely opposed to it, usurp time and attention, and trick them into serving its aims, and also trick them into serving the government of Donald Trump, saying that all of these changes are on the way. But in the meantime, Hillary is still out of jail. Her basically problem with like Benghazi's over now because all that statute of limitations has run out. And you don't see any of these people being arrested. Oh, we have 38,000 sealed indictments. Whatever. I don't believe any of that. I talked to Doug Hagman about that in depth. He's gone into many of the federal court cases where these indictments are supposed to be kept. He says they don't exist. And so this thing's a lie. And I remember a couple months ago, I spoke to a friend of mine who's a pastor, who's a brilliant man. And he actually is one of the points of the spear in the Patriot movement as far as telling the people the truth. And he had completely gotten sucked into this QAnon stuff. And I told him, I said, dude, I said, you're being handled by the people that you speak to in the White House. This is a psych-op against the pastors in the United States to try to get them to go along with Trump, who's a globalist now. He's become a globalist. And he's also a Zionist. And I said, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu is leading Donald Trump around, telling him what to do. And I said, Donald Trump is not doing anything he said he was doing, including cleaning the swamps, getting worse, getting more infested with gators and crocodiles. And at this point in time, we have to realize that basically, even if Donald Trump started off being legitimate, which I believe he did with all of my heart, that he has freedom of will and freedom of choice. And he's made the wrong choices and the wrong decisions. Why? Because his past is so checkered with organized crime, with the Italian mafia, with the Jewish mafia, with the Russian mafia, and all these people he's surrounding himself with, he's been compromised. And he's not going to allow himself to be taken down for the sake of the White House, and he will not allow himself basically to have his entire career and reputation destroyed because of being president of the United States. That's why he's even saying about he may not even run in 2020 again. Why? Because they've got too much dirt on him. Now, I will give him credit. They have come after him harder than any other president that I've ever seen them come after, Austin.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been unbelievable how they've hammered him and hammered him and hammered him, because I really believe he wanted to do what's right. But guys, as soon as you find out that your entire family may be killed and that you may be destroyed financially, your entire legacy is going to be completely damaged forever and ever, amen, you have a tendency to capitulate with these guys. But he should have thought about that before he decided to run for president of the United States, because a lot of us got behind him, including you guys that are listening to the show right now, to support him. And now we're having to deal with all this crazy blowback of the things that he's been doing and up to doing. Chuck, are you on with me yet?
I'm here, Ted.
Hey, Chuck, Pastor Baldwin. This is Pastor Chuck Baldwin, a good friend of the show. I love Pastor Ball when he comes on pretty much more than anybody else does, because, you know, we only have an hour talk show, and we love having him on as much as we possibly can, because he and I are kind of hooked at the hip as far as what we believe and what we see is going on, especially in the Christian church today. I wanted him to talk a little bit about the guns. There's people, how many people are saved by guns every year. He's got several really good articles. I want to talk to him today about what really happened in Gaza a few weeks ago. And I want to go into detail with him about how basically the bankers and the money people are running the world, all based on his columns he's put out the last few weeks. If you guys aren't already supporting Pastor Baldwin, I really highly recommend that you do so, and that you go as quickly as you can to his website to donate to him, because he's a true man of God, and it's my pleasure to have him on again. Pastor Baldwin, where do you want to start today? What do you want to talk about first? I know that you're so well-versed in so many different areas. I don't want to take you off where you were thinking about going, but I want to just kind of ask you some other questions on the sideline. So what do you want to start with?
Well, totally, it's up to you and how you want to direct the conversation. But you mentioned the guns saving so many lives every year. So that's what I guess I can comment on that first. You know, what we don't ever hear about in the media is how many times people are saved by the presence of a citizen carrying his own firearm. Just happened just recently in, what was it, Oklahoma, when somebody came in the restaurants, shot a couple people, and then a good citizen with a handgun that was carrying with him, he pulled it out and took the miscreant out of the picture and killed him in self-defense. So the thing about it is that this has been documented thoroughly over the last probably 30 years. Florida State University criminologist Gary Kleck was the guy that really broke the story wide open back in the 1990s when he published his book More Guns, Less Crime. He went into thorough and even, should I say, exhaustive research on the data pertaining to what do the presence of guns have in society pertaining to the safety of the American citizenry. And the thing that people need to understand is Professor Gleck was not a pro-gun activist.
when he started his survey, he truly believed in his mind, he bought into the mantra, you know, that guns are a definite factor in the increase of crime. That's kind of the way he approached it. He went into it thinking that the statistics were going to prove that everything that everybody was saying about guns being the problem was going to be verified in his research. Well, he got into it, you know, and found that just the opposite is true, that without any question, I mean, without any hesitation, the more guns there are in society carried by the common citizen, the safer the society is. And he proves that statistically. In the course of his study, he showed that somewhere between 2.1 and 2.5 million times a year, a life is saved, a crime is averted by the presence of a private citizen having a firearm when a crime was about to be or in the process of being committed. So you stop and think about that. 2.1 to 2.5 million times a year. That's over 6,000 something times a day that the presence of a gun in the hands of a private citizen averts a crime, potentially saves a life. This whole attack on the people's right to keep and bear arms, emphasis on bearing arms, and carrying them in public, carrying them in the restaurants, in the workplaces, carrying them wherever they are, as a means of, you know, confiscating guns. These are dangerous to society. We can't have people walking around carrying guns. You know, this reverting back to Dodge City and the Wild West and all these absolutely unfounded accusations are just blown out of the water. And Professor Gleck's study has never been challenged. It's never been repudiated. There, you'd think with all of the anti-gun zealots out there in academia that would love to tear apart Gary Kleck's research and make it look like, you know, that it's unfounded and sophomoric, et cetera, et cetera. It's never happened. His research is impeccable, undeniable. And so the point is that I tried to make in my column back a few weeks ago is that just what Professor Gleck said, more guns equals less crime. The more people are armed, the less opportunity the murderers and other criminals have to inflict their damage upon the populace. And the less people are armed, the more gun-free zones you have, the more restrictions you have on the carrying of firearms by honest people, the more opportunity the criminals have to inflict their damage. And that's why most every time there's a mass shooting, it's in a gun-free zone. There's only one way to solve this problem of mass shootings, and that's to get the government out of the way and let the people keep and bear arms as they choose. And there's enough people out there that have concealed weapon permits that are duly trained, whether they're military or not. And Trump said, you know, he wanted to consider arming teachers, and I'm all for that. The problem is he came back afterwards and he bowed down to all that pressure you were talking about a minute ago. And he said, well, only military personnel should be allowed to carry guns in the classroom. Like, that's baloney. I know dozens and dozens of Montanans who have never served in the military that can shoot circles around most people who have served in the military. Military training by itself, unless you're in special forces and those kind of units, which are very small in number compared to the whole, most military men have no more experience with firearms than your average gun enthusiast in the civilian community. In fact, many of them have less. We have competitions up here in Montana where the military will come and shoot against civilians and vice versa. And just about every competition, the civilians win. So, you know, but the point is that we need to let the people bear arms wherever they are, get rid of gun-free zones, And that is the only solution to these mass shootings.
You know, Pastor, it's interesting, too, because years ago I was at a Honda dealership in Winter Haven, and I was sitting on one of the motorcycles, and a sheriff's officer walks in. And I was talking to him. He walked over to me. He was looking at the bike. And, you know, I asked what kind of gun he was carrying. He was carrying a 40 millimeter. And, you know, I was carrying my, I didn't have my Glock or my Kimber with me at the time. I don't remember. So I started talking about the gun I was carrying. And he looked at me and goes, you know what? He says, if more people would carry guns, more people who are law-abiding citizens would carry guns, we would stop all this crime immediately, instantly. He goes, you guys understand that there are only so many sheriffs in Polk County. We can't be everywhere all the time. And if you're there to protect yourself and your family against someone who wants to do something wrong to you with a gun, you can't do it unless you're armed. And he goes, people need to understand that. Then I have another friend of mine who was a cop, and he told me that whenever he pulled somebody for like a speeding ticket, if he did a background check on them and found out, or if they showed him their concealed weapons permit upon being stopped, that he never, ever gave them a ticket. He would always tell them, thank you for having your concealed weapons permit. I appreciate you. Please be there if we need you. I'm going to let you go. And just let them go. He said every single time he did that, because he highly respected the people that had permits. And this is how the police act here in Central Florida with us. They're very, very respectful of when you own a concealed weapons permit. In fact, I have a Glock sticker on the outside of my car. It's like a four inch round sticker that says Glock, you know, perfection it's got a picture, a silhouette of a Glock. And I have that on my guns. People say, well, why are you doing that? Are you trying to intimidate people? I'm like, no. I'm trying to let somebody know if they want to hijack my car, this is probably the wrong car. It's also my wife's car. If you want to hijack my wife's car, this is probably the wrong car. If you had your choice of hijacking a black SUV that had a gun sticker on it, or a black SUV without a gun sticker, you're probably going to pick the one without the gun sticker. And the criminals understand that mindset. And you're absolutely right, Pastor. When someone's in a gun-free zone and they know they can't carry guns in there, the criminals don't pay any attention to the rules. They bring the guns in and they start shooting people who they know they can't defend themselves. Plus, it makes it a lot easier to carry out a false flag with Mossad hit teams or whoever hit teams you're using to do the attack, to because no one's going to be in there shooting back. And that's the craziest thing that, you know, and Glick from Florida State, he figured that out when he started doing the research. Even though he was going in with the opposite thought in mind, he said, wait a minute, guns do save lives. You know, millions of times a year they're used, over 6,000 times a day, like you mentioned earlier, just to prevent crime. So, yes, I completely and totally agree with this philosophy, and that's why there's so many murders in Chicago. All these big cities have Detroit, because no one can defend themselves, and the criminals could care less if they get arrested for having a gun, because they don't care. They're used to being in jail anyhow, and they're not going to listen to the cops regardless. The only other alternative is to turn yourself into a military state like Israel has, where you walk into Israel, and I've been there, and you're walking down the streets of Tel Aviv, and every single corner has somebody with an M16, multiple pairs of people with M16s, fully loaded, magazines in place, with the attack dogs, and everywhere you go, you have guns that are protecting the population in case there's some nutbag that decides to start running around shooting somebody. And quite frankly, I don't want to go that route. I'd rather have the ability, and our forefathers of our Constitution said that for us with our Second Amendment rights, that we need the ability to defend ourselves, you know, and not have to depend upon law enforcement to get there in 10 or 15 or 20 minutes later. A lot of stuff happens in 10 or 20 minutes. A lot of stuff happens in 10 or 20 seconds. Austin, what do you think?
Well, one aspect that a lot of people that don't understand defending yourself properly, they always use the fallback, and they say, well, that's what the police are for. If you have a problem, you call the police, like you just said. Well, if you look at the national average on police response times to an active shooting 911 call, the average response time in the United States is 9 minutes. 9 minutes for the police to get to you. The lowest one is generally around 3 minutes, the highest time being about an hour, which that's absolutely horrific. So 9 minutes is the average response time. My response is what you just said. There's a lot that can happen in 9 minutes. The average gunfight doesn't go over 30 seconds unless you're in the middle, you know, some extended firefight in the Middle East. Most shootings are done within a few seconds and they're over with. So relying on law enforcement to come and protect you and save you, it's not their duty to protect you and look out for you on a regular basis. There's a reason why we had the clause and we built the militias back in the beginning of this country. So everybody had a group of one another that looked out for one another, a civilian militia that always had each other's back. Wherever they were, they always knew somebody was armed, somebody was defending their area without having to have some extended, aggressive police state military force on every corner, like you just said. So, I mean, you're absolutely right on that aspect.
Let me just add that the courts have ruled consistently. I mean, this is going back for 100 years, that it is not the responsibility, I repeat, it is not the responsibility, and you said it, Austin, it is not the responsibility of the police to protect the American people. There have been lawsuits after lawsuits that have been filed because the police showed up too late, or because the police were not able to protect the individual, and either the person was killed or severely injured or whatever the case may be. And so the victims hired a lawyer and then sued the police department or sued the sheriff's office or the deputy, whoever it was. And the officers have never lost a case in court. The court has always consistently said it is not the responsibility of the police to protect the American people. It is the responsibility of the people to protect themselves. The responsibility of the police officer is to come and to investigate the crime, to gather the facts, to apprehend the suspected guilty party, to take him to a court of justice that he might be determined guilty or innocent, in which he's presumed innocent until proven guilty. That is the responsibility of the police officer and the police agencies. And so this whole concept that you just brought up, which is absolutely avant-garde, I mean, this is what everybody thinks, and everybody, including many teachers and Christian pastors, you know, they say the same thing. It's the police's responsibility. Let's let them do their job. That's what they're paid for, blah, blah, blah. And it's not. That is a misnomer. Every lawyer in America knows it. Every judge in America knows it. And every cop in America knows it. I mean, these guys in the last shooting down in your state there in Parkland, whenever those cops chose to stay outside the building while the shooting was going on, and of course we all have an opinion of what we think about that. You know, I share the opinion of what everybody thinks about that. You know, that armed law enforcement personnel would stand outside a building while a madman is in there gunning down teenagers and teachers, and is inexcusable. But here's the thing. You won't see any of those police officers go to court over this. You won't see any charges over this. These guys are taught, they are schooled by FBI agents, most of them retired, that do this for a living, that here is the legal protocols for gun situations, and part of the things that they're taught, part of the of their protocol that they're taught in their FBI training programs, is that it is not their obligation to confront the shooter unless they choose to do so. In other words, they assess and evaluate the situation, and they make a choice as to whether they want to confront the shooter. It's not mandatory. And here's this, and I've seen the training manuals and the training videos that these FBI agents use with these police officers. And here's what the FBI trainers will tell them. They'll say, what makes the determination as to whether you confront the shooter is your safety, the police officer's safety. It's not the safety of the citizen. It's not the safety of the victims. It's your safety. You make an assessment on whether you should proceed to confront an armed gunman based upon your own personal safety. And that is how they are taught. That is how they are trained. So I'm telling you that every policeman, every lawyer, every judge in America knows it's not the responsibility of the police to protect the citizens. If the citizens are not protecting themselves, it's the citizens' problem. And that's why these policemen are acting the way they do in many of these shootings. And I'm telling you, this idea that the American people have, this misnomer, that it's the job They think it's the job of the police to protect them. And the cops know, you know what, it's not my job. And the lawyers know, you know, it's not his job. And the judges know, it's not his job. And yet here's the people out here being propagandized by the media and all these anti-gun people that are keep saying, it's the police's job, it's the police's job, it's the police's job, and it's not. And it never has been, and it never will be. It's our job as citizens to protect ourselves.
I agree with you 100%, Chuck. Now, also I want to talk about this last column you came out with, Perpetual War, a Racket for Politicians, Bankers, and War Profiteers. You know, I've read Smedley Butler's book. You know, he had two Congressional Medal of Honor winners. He was given the Congressional Medal of Honor twice, the most highly decorated veteran of World War I, and he basically came out against this New World Order and against this incredible banking monopoly that runs the business, becomes the country, the war and the wars and basically the countries and the world, and basically said everything's a business for these guys, and they don't care who wins as long as they're supplying both sides ammo. Tell me what you think about this and kind of summarize that column for me, if you could, Pastor.
Well, you know, back in 2003, when the United States invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, I made the statement, I said, folks, put up the yellow ribbons because Johnny ain't ever marching home again. And that was before I knew about the Pentagon's plan to launch seven wars against seven Middle Eastern nations. We didn't learn about that until 2007, when General Wesley Clark went public with the fact that the United States had planned immediately following the events of 9/11 to attack Iraq, Syria, Libya, Lebanon, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. And then, of course, we also know that they plan to invade and remain in Afghanistan. So in and out with it, you know, they attack Niger, and we're helping the Saudis in Yemen. So it's expanded beyond those seven nations. But the point is this was the concerted plan of the U.S. government immediately following the attacks on 9/11. Obviously, these countries that we just named have nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with the attacks on 9/11. This was just an aggressive military plan, I believe, on behalf of the State of Israel, that was planned, and 2001 attacks was just an excuse. It was an opportunity to implement the attacks that was already planned by the Pentagon. And so we've been in perpetual war ever since. Ever since 2001, the introduction of the war on terror, the introduction of the burgeoning police state at home, and the warfare state as a federal policy in Washington, D.C., we have been in a perpetual war. We are in perpetual war, and we are going to stay in perpetual war in the Middle East. I was telling my folks yesterday in my congregation on here the weekend of Memorial Day, I was talking about this very subject. And I said, you know, I just read a report a few days ago that said that the munitions makers, especially the ones that are making all these bombs and missiles that we're firing and dropping on these nations around the Middle East, are so depleted in their supply of bombs and missiles that they're not able to keep up with the amount of bombs and missiles that we are dropping on these countries, especially in the Middle East. I mean, President Trump has dropped more bombs already in his administration than Barack Obama did in his entire 4 years of his presidency. And if Trump keeps going at the rate that he's going right now, by the time he ends his first term, he will have dropped more bombs on the Middle East than Obama and Bush put together. You know, so we have not de-escalated this military perpetual war mentality since Trump took office, even though he campaigned promising to be a peace president. He promised that he would have friendly relations with Russia. We would not seek regime change. He mocked Obama for his policies in the Middle East and the bombs he dropped and the wars that he was enacting. He mocked him on the campaign trail and said, you know, we've got to take care of America first. We can't be going around changing regimes everywhere we want to, building nations and, you know, playing politics and everybody's internal affairs. And people voted for him on that promise, much like Woodrow Wilson before World War II. But anyway, before World War I, he came along afterward and he started doing just the opposite. And now then, we're literally on the verge of World War III. I've been saying that for months. You know, people don't want to hear it. They think that America is impregnable, that we are not vulnerable to the fallout and the fall and the fallback of serious war, that we're impervious to that, which is not true. You know, we're risking war with Russia. We're risking war with China. You know, we're trying to get regime change in Syria. We're trying to get regime change in Iran. We withdrew from the Iran treaty. Now we're threatening extreme boycotts that are going to escalate hostilities even more. We've got special forces troops on the ground in that region. We've got military bases in Syria. We're building more military bases in Syria. We're talking about regime change in Iran. We're talking about attacking Iran. Israel is attacking Syria. Israel is attacking Iranian forces. There were two Russian military troops that were killed recently in joint U.S. Israel attacks on Iranian positions in Syria, which, by the way, the Iranians are in Syria legally and lawfully. They were invited into the country by President Assad, so there's nothing wrong with Iran having troops in Syria. They were invited to be there by the Syrian government, unlike our troops that are in Syria illegally as an invasion force, not so with the Iranians. So we are escalating war all over the Middle East, and we are risking war with Russia. We are risking war with China. We are risking a major escalation in hostilities, even potentially leading up to World War III. And this is from the guy that promised to be the peace guy in the White House. This is the guy that wanted to get along with nations and not have foreign interventionism and all that kind of thing. Completely flipped as soon as he became president. So, you know, I tried to draw people's attention to the, you know, to the same old that Smedley Butler, Major General U.S. Marine Corps, twice awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, the most decorated military person at that time in U.S. history. And after World War One, and after everything that he saw in World War One, he said, you know, war is a racket. That was the name of his book. He talked about who makes money off of war, who profits off of war, but what's the real deal behind war. And as a military man, as a warrior, as a patriot, who excelled to the nth degree in his profession, he came away with the conclusion that war is a racket. It's for the bankers. It's for the globalists. It's for the war profiteers, the war merchants. And, you know, it's being paid for in blood and death of the young men that are fighting and dying in these wars. And so I was trying to, on this Memorial Day occasion, remind people of General Butler's book and what he had taught us as a military man, because we've forgotten it. You know, we've forgotten it now. I mean, we went through Vietnam, and everybody was sick of war after Vietnam. Nobody wanted war anymore. But after 9/11, all that changed, and when the nation has become warmongers again, the government are warmongers again, the war poor profiteers are the ones that are making trillions of dollars off of war. We're not de-escalating anything, just the opposite. We are increasing hostilities all over Europe and in the Middle East. We are encroaching on Russia's borders to the point of incitement. We're encroaching on China's waterways to the point of incitement. I mean, it's almost like that Trump is trying. It's almost like Trump is doing everything he can to goad the world into war. That's exactly the way it seems.
Well, Pastor, you know what's interesting to me, because this past weekend, an illegal alien was shot. A woman was killed crossing the U.S. border, and yes, it's all over the news. This is insane. In Rio Bravo, Texas, Claudia Patricia Gomez, my condolences to her family, 20 years old, traveled from Guatemala to the U.S. as an economic migrant seeking a job. Unfortunately, she chose to enter illegally as part of a group that sought to overcome a U.S. border patrol. Shortly after she set foot in Texas, there was a shot, and she was killed by a Border Patrol officer who said that she was not the target, but simply part of a group that was rushing towards him. The original report was the officer was attacked by migrants with blunt objects, but later this was changed to claim that the group rushed the officer after ignoring threats to get on the ground. Three illegal immigrants were arrested. This one lady was killed. You know, it's interesting to me how 60 people died in Gaza a few weeks ago. Thousands were shot. The United Nations goes insane over this, but Israel never changes its policy because Israel is basically being controlled by Rothschilds, which we all know that. I mean, it's not even a question of any of this. And Rothschilds want World War III. Rothschilds want to bring in Armageddon. They want to bring in their new satanic new world order. They want to bring in Lucifer. Why the Christians all sit around thinking we're going to get raptured and get pulled up on the first load, and nothing could possibly happen to us because we've supported Israel. Therefore, we're going to be raptured and go out and be with glory with God while all hell breaks loose on the planet with the Antichrist ruling from Jerusalem. So we've got this major mess that's going on with Trump. I think he's been converted over to the Zionist agenda because so many people in his, basically his campaign and his administration now are Zionists. And it saddens me because you're absolutely right, Pastor. Nothing changed. I mean, I know you didn't support Donald Trump. You were neutral on the whole election. I personally, I was so adamantly opposed to Hillary Clinton, which I think we all were, that I, you know, begrudgingly supported Trump because I knew that it was better than what Hillary was. And now it turns out that it probably isn't much different than what Hillary was, except for maybe, you know, the fact that he doesn't want to take away our rights for having guns as quickly as Hillary did, though he had to run his mouth after the Parkland shooting. And now we have some of the most draconian gun laws in the state of Florida in the entire country.
Yep, yeah, we do.
And now they're going to probably, and they're probably do the same thing in Texas. And so now we've got New York with draconian gun laws, Florida with draconian gun laws, California with draconian gun laws, and now they're trying to do the same thing in Texas because of the shooting out in Texas. So guys, it's one of those things that all of us need to pay careful attention to what's happening, because guys, I don't care who the country is, whether it's Russia or China or the United States or Israel or Germany or England or France or anybody, if you start just shooting unarmed civilians and killing them and not trying to subdue them in other fashions, all we're turning into is a country that's composed of tyranny, like they did in London this week when they arrested the young gentleman, had him in jail and sentenced to prison within 6 hours. I mean, we've got to understand where this is going and where it's taking us. Pastor Baldwin, do you have any closing comments?
Well, no, I appreciate you guys, Austin and Ted, and what you guys are putting out, because unfortunately, the vast majority of the media, including the conservative, so-called conservative media or alt media, as it's called sometimes, has really, I think, done a poor job of keeping the American people on top of really the cutting edge issues today. They're so afraid of offending Trump. They're so afraid of offending the people that voted for Trump. They're so afraid of taking exception to Trump's egregious policies, whatever they may be, domestically or internationally. And as a result, you know, it's like the liberals, whenever a liberal is in power, like Obama, or if Hillary had won, you know that all of the mainstream media, the left propaganda media, you know, would give them a pass for everything. I mean, no matter what they did, they wouldn't tell the truth. They wouldn't be honest. They're still not about Hillary and about whoever the liberal might be at the time. But, you know, the conservative and the alt media should be different. You know, we should be about principle. We should be about truth. We should be about the Constitution and freedom and liberty.
That's right.
And when we start letting partisan politics cloud our assessments and our public statements and our positions to the people, and we're willing to overlook unconstitutional conduct, we're willing to overlook police state conduct and warfare state and Zionism and all these issues that are coming to the front under Trump's administration, but they won't talk about them. They won't criticize it. You know, there is, in my view, they're just as bad as the left that are covering up the truth for their guy. You know, it shouldn't matter to freedom-loving people whether the president is Republican or a Democrat, whether it's conservative or a liberal. The issues of truth, constitutional government, freedom, liberty, and the warfareism and the lack thereof, you know, a diplomatic policy of foreign affairs relative to peace and prosperity being the goal, war as an ultimate last result only and purely defensive in nature, I mean, this, that's not even discussing the whole concept of unjust war, which war, the war of aggression, is an unjust war. The only just war is a defensive war. You and I would go to prison for the rest of our lives if we harmed an individual that wasn't attacking us. If that individual was not trying to harm us and we harmed them, we would pay the consequences in prison. Well, governments don't have the right to harm people that are not harming us either. And in the eyes of God, it's the same law, that the law of just war, the law of self-defense. And when we let our guys, our side, Donald Trump in this case, when we let him violate the same laws of God, laws of nature, the laws of international law, the laws of our Constitution, and as Christians and as conservative spokesmen and radio people and writers and so forth, then as far as I'm concerned, we're just as guilty as the left, because we're letting evil prevail in our country, and we're bringing our nation further and deeper into the throes of God's judgment, regardless of who is in the White House or who is in Congress. We should be far less concerned about what party is in Congress and who's in the White House than we are about being right and true and honest with the eternal principles of God's law, natural law, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, international law, and the principles of just war, et cetera, et cetera. These are the things that should motivate us. But unfortunately, for the vast majority of us, that's not what motivates us. It's all about keeping Trump elected now that he's in office, before, you know, about getting him elected. You know, I still hear people talk about, you know, well, he's better than Hillary Clinton. Okay, well, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. At this point, we don't really know. The point is, Hillary lost. Hillary lost 2 years ago, almost now. Hillary lost. We have Donald Trump in the White House. We have to deal with the man that is the President of the United States. He's not candidate Trump anymore. He's not the rhetoric Trump anymore. When this man talks now, he's talking as the President of the United States of America, not as a private citizen who wants to be president. When he makes actions and decisions now, he's acting as the President of the United States. He is impacting the world as well as our country with every decision he makes, every word that he says. Like you said, down there in Florida, I lived in Florida for over 30 years, as you know, up in the Panhandle. And good grief, Trump said, well, we got to grab the guns first and then worry about due process second. That was one of the most asinine, unbelievable, stupid, egregiously unconstitutional statements anybody could ever make, no matter what their party affiliation. And when he said that, state legislatures around the country began to do just exactly what happened in Florida.
Yep.
Florida got it done quicker. But Maryland is doing it. Illinois is doing it. Washington State is doing it. They're trying to get it passed in Texas, as you said. Hopefully Texas will hold the line. But what I'm saying is, all of that was precipitated on one statement that President Trump made. He didn't sign anything. He didn't propose a law. He made a statement. And bingo, several states in the country now have egregious gun control laws, red flag laws. They're going around their communities and they're taking guns away from people, confiscating their guns without due process, without any adjudication of mental illness, without any court appearance, on the premise that this person might be a threat to someone. And on that, they're confiscating their guns contrary to every rule of law in our Constitution and Bill of Rights and most state laws. And all this was predicated on Trump's statement. So we are dealing with the president that is in the office. We're not dealing with Hillary Clinton anymore. We're not dealing with whoever the challengers were. And it's time people come up to date and get real about who's in the White House and what he's doing, and start dealing with what he's doing from a consistent constitutional Christian perspective, standing on principle and truth. And if we don't do that, and if we don't start doing that better, here in the very near future. By the time Trump ends his four-year administration, the country is going to be far worse off than it was when he took office.
Wow. Pastor Baldwin, thank you so much for coming on with me today on this Memorial Day holiday. I pray that God continues to bless you and to lift you up and to protect you, and that you continue to be, you know, blessed in all the areas of your life. And again, thank you so much for coming on. What an incredible final 5 minutes this has been with you, just giving your opinion on this. It's been dead on point. So thank you so much. We'll go ahead and close the show now. Thank you, Pastor Baldwin. You know, guys, when, you know, we have people come on like Pastor Baldwin, it's because they're favorite guests of mine and Austin's and a lot of the listeners. And to me, it's wonderful when we can have him on and give his opinion. And he's right. It's time to stop even talking about that Trump's better than Hillary. We just got to get Hillary's name off the list. I mean, Trump's who we have now. And he made an eloquent point on that. I don't even like mentioning Witch of Benghazi's name. And so we just need to walk away from who and what she is and what she was, and just realize that we've got to deal with who we have in the White House. By the way, one quick nutrition story, and then I got to get Austin to close. Vaccinated versus unvaccinated study has now linked hepatitis B vaccine directly to autism. In other words, when the baby gets vaccinated the day of its birth, a few hours after birth, immediately after birth, that shot has now been linked directly to autism. I don't have the ability or time right now to cover this story. I'm going to bring it back up tomorrow, but this is one of the smoking guns, guys, that's causing so many neurological problems to these young children. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you. Thanks so much for your support, for your prayers. I, you know, get to pray for you guys on a regular basis. Thank you so much for allowing me to do that. You guys are incredible. I pray that God just continues to take care of all of you, that his face shines upon you. And again, my special thanks to Pastor Baldwin. Okay, Austin, I'll do the write-up. Show's yours. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Thank you, bud. Yes, guys, if you need anything, be sure to check us out at Health Masters. We got a lot of different specials running right now. The Doug 5 coupon that we basically ran for Memorial Day special is still active right now on the website. And be sure to check out the B Complex that we're doing a really big sale on right now. We've had a lot of requests for methylated B vitamins lately, and we're pretty much blowing this product out. It still has a very long expiration date, almost 2 years, so it's a very fresh batch. But we're pretty much giving it away right above our dead cost, simply to provide everybody with the ability to make sure everybody's getting high-quality methylated B vitamins. So be sure to check that out on the website at healthmasters.com, the B Complex Super Sale, over 30% off right now. We appreciate you. We love you guys. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night and a great Memorial Day, and we'll be back on with you guys tomorrow, as always.